In Wisconsin's capital, lawmakers are working on the third HOPE package to fight heroin and opioid addiction. But the headlines just this week: overdose suspected in death of four-year-old in Milwaukee, and there's a new drug killer in carfentanil. So it's time for an update on the fight against heroin and opioid and other addictions with Attorney General Brad Schimmel and R.J. Lurquin of the Dane County Sheriff's Department Drug Task Force. Gentlemen, thanks very much for coming in for an update.
Thank you, Steve.
Let's start first with this week's headline news. Carfentanil, now they're up to three deaths potentially in Milwaukee County and potentially one in Dane County. Talk to me about the new drug in the state, carfentanil. Is this a surprise to anybody?
We've seen it in other places starting first. In Ohio, it really poked its head up first, and another nice, wholesome Midwestern state where these things are popping up. And we've been anticipating and we're watching for it. Over a year ago, our crime lab got some samples so that we have to have a standard to test against. One of the challenges is that the fentanyls, and all the way up to the most powerful one we think is carfentanil, with these, it's not being made by a pharmaceutical company.
Well, that's
it's
important.
Being made by illicit labs, and typically in Mexico. And they're getting the raw ingredients, producing that, and shipping it up here for sale. So it's hard for us to keep up with the chemical changes. There are quite a few different types of fentanyls now that are available, and they're all 50 to 100 times more potent than the very potent heroin we have for sale on the street.
Have we graduated then from heroin, opioids, fentanyl now to carfentanil, Sergeant?
It appears that way. Like the Attorney General said, we saw it in different areas of the country, and unfortunately it started working its way toward the Midwest, and now it is here. Like you said, there's been a couple reported cases in Milwaukee, and we've had one reported in the Madison area. So it unfortunately has worked its way up to this area, and unfortunately will probably continue to spread until we get it under control.
Well, I used to be scared reading the headlines on fentanyl. Now I'm petrified the headlines on carfentanil. Talk to me about the relationship between those two drugs, gentlemen.
They're different, more potent chemical formulations. It's one of the challenges we've had with legislation at the state and federal level is trying to keep up with what is illegal. And they change the chemical structure. It makes it harder for us to make the case against them. But in the end, this all starts with someone, in almost all cases, with someone abusing prescription narcotic painkillers.
Okay.
They become addicted, and then it's heroin. Then it's more and more potent drugs that they're looking for. And more the drug cartels are recognizing that they have much more profit to be made by making these different types of fentanyl in labs rather than going out and growing poppies to make heroin.
Sergeant, when your officers go out, not knowing what drug they may be dealing with, how does this change how they react? Is there more danger when there's carfentanil out there? Just give me this street perspective, please.
Yeah, I mean, there is certainly a huge concern in law enforcement and the medical field and anybody who comes in contact with. Obviously, first it was heroin, and then it was heroin laced with fentanyl, and now it's carfentanil. You get, we may go to do a search warrant or get a hold of, you know this drug through our law enforcement actions, and we have to test it or send it to the crime lab, and they have to test it. Now there's procedures to do that, but the concern is when we're out in the field or back at our evidence areas, you know, to make sure that we're safely handling this stuff, because even just getting a small amount on your hands or breathing it can be a medical disaster for law enforcement. So that's a huge concern
just
that we have to deal with.
Excuse me, just in the course of investigating that crime,
right,
that poses a threat to your law officers. Then it goes to your crime labs, which your agency offers. Now, do your crime labs then have to recalibrate and reinvent testing for some of these drugs, these street-made drugs?
Yes, we're constantly having to update our standards. A standard is the known that we test against when we run it through a gas chromatograph. And you know, to the sergeant's point, we have new protocols at the Division of Criminal Investigation at DOJ where if we're testing an unknown powdered substance, there have to be two officers present. They have to be gloved and masked. There has to be Narcan in the room, because we recognize if this stuff, a small amount that gets into the air, you inhale that, a small amount gets through your transdermally through your skin, that can be an overdose death. Somebody has to be there to be able to administer Narcan to bring that officer back to life.
Let's go back to carfentanil for a moment. How great a danger does it pose in terms of, do you expect it to dramatically and significantly increase, show up more and more statewide, General?
This seems to be the trend. The users are looking for a higher high. They call it chasing the dragon. They're trying to get the high they had the first time they used. As I understand it from people in recovery, you don't ever get there. You can't ever achieve that first high again, but you keep trying to chase after that. And the drug cartels know that, so it's a competitive market. They're marketing more and more potent drugs. But part of the problem is you don't know what you're buying when you buy this stuff. It's a white powdery or chunky substance. You don't know what the potency is. You don't know if you're buying 22% pure heroin, 50% pure heroin, or worse, you're buying something that's laced with fentanyl. We're finding some cases now where marijuana has been laced with other drugs. We're concerned that that will include fentanyl down the road. All these different things, you don't know what you're buying, and that's part of the danger. Fentanyl, and then as you get more potent and potent with carfentanil, this is a very, very small amount. When you look at the heroin, takes a very small amount. Well, this is 1/100th of the amount of drug.
Heroin is, let's put it the other way, carfentanil is 100 times more lethal than heroin. Have I said that correctly, General?
Well, just fentanyl, okay, is 50 to 100 times more potent than heroin, and carfentanil takes it up a notch. Fentanyl is 1,000 times as potent as a morphine equivalent dose.
Then how does someone out there chasing the next high, chasing the dragon, do they have any way to know what they're illicitly and illegally buying, Sergeant?
No.
They don't?
The simple answer.
So there's no advice to them?
Well,
to try to stay alive?
Right. I mean, we certainly would, we have advice, and the simple fact is, obviously, don't buy drugs, but that's not the answer. I mean, I'm sure
you have to get beyond that.
Right,
we have real practical advice.
Exactly. Yeah, that's true. That's just not practical advice, and we've seen that with the struggles we've been dealing with over the last couple of years. But you're right, the normal person that goes out and buys drugs on the street has really no idea what they're buying. They may say I want to buy heroin or cocaine or something like that. And as the sellers may say, that's what they're selling. But we're seeing that a lot of our drugs are laced with fentanyl. And now, unfortunately, it's even gone to the next step of carfentanil. And the reason they do that is, like the Attorney General said, it's cheap. It's cheaper to get these drugs like carfentanil and fentanyl, and you can cut your product with that, so it's a money-making thing for the drug dealers in the cartel, because now they're selling less of the heroin and more of the fentanyl or carfentanil, and that's where the money is, unfortunately. So yeah, it's just a vicious cycle.
You know, this kind of circles back around to the point I've been trying to make since I've been Attorney General, is for a long time we've tried to control drug issues by going after the supply side. Well, we're seeing here some of the challenges with going after the supply side. We have got to focus on the demand side. We've got to stop Wisconsinites from ever experimenting with usually it's prescription painkillers. And once you start down that path, you're headed toward this. You'll get to this point that you don't know what you're buying. That was the one good thing when people can get their hands on the prescription painkillers. At least you do know what's in those, although there's a caveat, because we've in Wisconsin we have caught some drug traffickers who are making pills now, they're using the illicit drugs. So we're losing that too. You might be buying what looks like a 40 milligram OxyContin, but it's not.
Is Narcan is that successful in treating fentanyl and carfentanil, or are we beyond that, sir?
It's it's effective, but you're going to need more doses. The more powerful the opiate that you overdosed on, you're going to have a diminishing return from the Narcan. And there's certainly a point at which you'll have taken such a potent dose that Narcan isn't going to bring you back.
Sergeant, talk about Narcan. If someone is brought back by Narcan, they realize that they could have died. Why then, over the next 28, 48 hours, maybe within a week, they would use again if their life has been saved by Narcan? What am I missing here?
I just think it's the addiction, the need for that drug, the need for that high. And I've seen numerous cases, and law enforcement agencies all over the state have seen numerous cases where they've dealing with people that they've Narcanned 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 times throughout the course of weeks or months. But the addiction drives that person back to that drug of choice, whatever that might be. And I know you mentioned the word treatment with Narcan, and I want to make
the wrong term. Thank you.
Yeah,
correct me
if you don't mind.
Please.
I wouldn't consider Narcan a treatment. I would consider it Narcan as something that we use as a tool.
Thank you.
But it's not. I wouldn't consider it treatment because it doesn't really treat the main issue of the addiction.
So, someone has used an illegal drug, and an officer finds him. And say brings them back with Narcan. And did I hear you say earlier they ask, why did you interrupt my high?
I have had that happen, yes. On more than one occasion, we've had people who were on death's door and law enforcement has administered Narcan and what I would consider saved their life. And the first comments have been, you ruined my high, or why did you ruin my high?
And the officers then say, I was saving your life, ma'am or sir. Right?
Yes. But again, that's really the addiction talking. And you can just see how controlling that addiction can be to the point where you don't think about the fact that you might die. You just think about getting that high.
You know, there's another point to this. Many times, by the time people are shooting up opiates, they're no longer getting high. They're just keeping from getting sick. I mean, there's no joy in their life. They can't even get the joy of being high anymore. And when Narcan's administered, there's actually a balance to strike. Administer enough to bring them back to life, but don't plunge them all the way into deep withdrawals, because now they're going to go immediately into that sickness. But ultimately, administering Narcan shouldn't be the end of the story with this individual. We now need to work to get them some kind of help, or we will be back doing it again. We know in our drug treatment court in Waukesha County, when I was DA there, we knew that on average the people coming into our drug treatment court had been brought back to life seven times by Narcan. That's the average.
And I want to ask about one other thing that was reported today in the journal Sentinel. If the death of the 4-year-old is confirmed as an overdose, we're talking Milwaukee County, it would be the 7th child under the age of 5 to have died of a drug overdose in the last 19 months in Milwaukee County. I'm too naive on this. How can children as young as 2, 3, 4, and 5 die of drug overdoses?
Because when there's a parent or caregiver or some other family member in that house that is using, and they leave their paraphernalia or residual of the drug around, children get into that. They get it on their fingers, put their fingers in their mouths. They pick up the paraphernalia, put that in their mouths. The idea of we need to be very concerned about the dangers to children in homes like that. Wisconsin's actually a leader in the nation when it comes to our drug endangered children programs. We have the majority of the counties in our state have DEC or drug endangered children programs that go beyond just studying the drug incident that happened in that house, but go into looking with all the systems, human services, public health, law enforcement. Everybody engages together to focus on what do we do to make sure the children in that house aren't put in danger again.
I want to turn to a different tone. I want to ask, is there any good news here? So, General, in the Capitol, they're working on the HOPE 3 package. We've passed HOPE 1, HOPE 2. Yeah. Do you see some progress as a result of HOPE 1, 2, and what's been the most effective tools in HOPE 1 and 2? What are you most hopeful about in HOPE 3, sir?
Well, there is definitely reason to be optimistic. 5 years ago, I think we felt like John the Baptist out in the wilderness. Nobody was listening. And now we're getting, um, we're get, everybody seems to get now, that we do need to take this seriously and everybody wants to be part of the solution. We still have a long way to go. We've seen some progress. Between 2015 and 2016, the last 3 months of those 2 years, when mm-hmm. we compared them, we found that prescribing of opioids went down by 11% in Wisconsin. That's great news, because no law did that.
You got buy-in from the medical yep. community and the pharmacists.
Right.
And now there's a new database, but you were probably going to tell me about yep. that, so I don't want to steal your... Go ahead, sir.
And, you know, and we have our next drug take-back day coming up on April 29th. The last
staggering
two,
numbers.
Yes.
I keep interrupting
in, you. In 2 years, we've collected over 207,000 pounds of unused medications in Wisconsin. That's almost 12 semi-trucks full. In April of last year, we were number three in the nation for the amount we collected. Last October, we were number two in the nation. Only Texas collected more than us. This is great news, because what it tells you is that the average household in Wisconsin understands they have a role to play in this solution. That's great progress. This, you know, the first thing is to get people engaged, to get people to understand. When you look at our legislature, when you talk about the HOPE legislation, it's been passing 17 aggressive bills in the last two sessions, passed unanimously. So far, HOPE 3 passed unanimously in the Assembly.
In the Assembly.
We're waiting on the Senate yet. I have no reason to think it's not going to pass overwhelmingly in the Senate, and the governor will sign these things, and we'll continue to be aggressive in this fight.
But before I ask the sergeant a question, do the street dealers and the cartels stay one step ahead of uniformed officers like him and the lawmaking process?
You know, part of the problem is the nature of, and I don't want to go too far out beyond my skills with the sergeant here, but the nature of what a drug dealer is has changed. There aren't drug houses like we had years ago, where you knew where people were going to buy this. Now it's a throwaway cell phone that the dealer uses for a very brief period of time. They will meet you in a restaurant parking lot or wherever, transfer the drugs. You don't even know who you're buying the drugs from.
Well, Sergeant, is there any good news out there as someone from the street level on this issue?
There is, and referring back to, I've been in our drug unit for almost 5 years now, and I think back when I first started, even the change that has gone on. You look at, and I made copies of the nine recent bills that have just gone through. All of these are in an effort to get help to not only the person that's addicted, but when you start talking about all the families that are involved and all the employers. I just did a conference for risk managers amongst the state, and the amount of, and they were really interested because the amount of money and job time lost and all the issues that they have to deal with from a business aspect. And this was not only county and state agencies, but the private sector too. So these type of bills, when you start talking about, you know, special schools, or you start talking about additional money for training for doctors and additional money for alternatives to prosecution. Because the days of law enforcement arresting a user, putting them in jail for whatever, 6 months, a year, 3 months, whatever, and then just cutting them loose, those days have to go away, because it's not really doing anyone any favors. Now, on the law enforcement side, we will certainly arrest people when we have to, and we understand that's our job, but we're doing a disservice to that addict and that addict's family and everyone else involved in that addict's life if we don't at least provide them with more than just incarceration.
Well, the change that needs to happen is happening, is that we can't view the incarceration as the answer to the
Correct.
Problem. It is often a piece of it, because, frankly, sometimes having that person in the jail is the only way we're going to stop them from shooting up again that night or the next morning. So we get them there, and it can be our foot in the door, because once they get clean in the jail for a brief period, we can start having a conversation with them about, how about drug treatment court? Would you consider putting in the effort there? But as a criminal justice system, you know, for a long time we kind of functioned under Albert Einstein's definition of insanity, where we did the same thing over and over again and expected a different result. So it was no wonder we had such terrible recidivism rates, and still do, when you're dealing with people of an alcohol and other drug abuse issue. It doesn't work to just confine them and expect that they'll come out and be fine. it works for some. But frankly, now that the opiates are such a big problem, it's very few. So now we work very much, as they're coming out of the jail, we're looking for ways, or prison, we're looking for ways to be changing their behavior long term.
Has there been a paradigm shift in the treatment resources over the last 5 years? Some of the things you've just been referred to. Instead of arresting them, locking them up, and compounding the problems, are there more treatment resources than 5 years ago?
We now have 50 counties in Wisconsin that have either have an existing drug treatment and diversion court or are in the process of putting one in place right now. That's fabulous news. And some of the tribes have it as well. We're working to get this to be available to any county because this problem's affecting every county. We'll keep moving toward that. We're seeing the legislature and the governor focusing more money on this. Every time we have a new session, they're finding more money to put into this, and that's all great news. Some of this, the HOPE 3 legislation involves getting money to training more people, getting money to enticing people into doing this work. Frankly, for a long time, we've paid so poorly when it comes to alcohol or the drug abuse and mental health treatment that there's just not enough people doing the work in those fields. We need to raise the reimbursement rates to attract more people in. A 2013 Wisconsin State Council on Alcohol and Other Drug Abuse survey found over 163,000 people in Wisconsin abusing opiates in some manner. We cannot treat 163,000 people. And there are a number of ways that we can start addressing this. We need to get more treatment capabilities. We also need to start intervening earlier. And the sergeant made a great point about working with employers. We're doing this because employers can be a place where we could start helping people sooner. Typically right now, by the time we get a chance to work with somebody, we've got them under arrest. And they've blown up everything. They long ago lost their job. Their family has kicked them out because they can't do anything anymore to work with them. Right. They've lost everything. And now we need this much in resources to try to get this person back to healthy. If there was a way to get people to seek help earlier on, maybe we need this much in treatment resources, and we could expand our capabilities then.
You talked about one family. Wisconsin I has been working on a documentary on this issue for more than a year, and you'll be seeing it soon. But now let's listen to Adele's situation. And it's about a little bit more than 2 minutes. So let's talk to let's hear from Adele's parents, and let's hear from Adele, and let's hear from Adele's brother. 2 minutes on Adele and her problems with addiction and her comeback.
Addiction's known as a family disease because it doesn't just impact the person that's using. It impacts people's family, their friends, their coworkers, their teachers, everybody. If you've known anybody that's ever struggled with active addiction, it's probably impacted you.
It hit us like a ton of bricks when she went into the hospital the first time with heroin overdose because we had no idea. So that was a huge shock. We did not see it coming.
No, not at all.
I didn't know what to do or how to feel. I was literally, I couldn't hardly think of what to do.
I was furious, hurt, embarrassed, walk around with knots in your stomach 24 hours a day, waiting for the next call, what's it going to be, what is it, you know, the begging, the
threatening.
It was just
the deal making, you know, just the constant. The phone would ring and your heart would just stop because you just were expecting it to be that phone call that said she's gone.
Pretty amazing, really, from where she was to what she's doing now. I mean, assumed a funeral was coming before anything, really.
But it all came crashing down just as it always does. My parents put me on the streets. They, enough is enough.
She's done controlling our lives. It's not going to happen anymore. And I made the decision, and it was the hardest thing I ever did. They said she's not coming back in the house until she gets stuff together. By making that decision, there was times she showed up, rain and cold, whatever, and I turned her away. I said, nope, you're not coming in here. I mean, I didn't let her know, but I went back to the room and cried. Because that was my daughter that I just said no. But I had to for us, for the family.
The story of Adele, which we just heard, is this fairly typical, gentlemen?
You know, there's not a typical. There's so many, but I would say it's common.
Okay.
Absolutely. When I was DA, there were quite a few times I got calls on Monday morning when I got into the office, and it would be a parent saying, I finally called police. My child is in your jail. Mr. Schimmel, please don't let them get out. Because my husband or my wife and I, we've slept through the night for the first time in as long as we can remember this weekend because we finally knew they were safe somewhere. That's a terrible decision for a parent to have to make, but they do.
As Adele struggles with staying clean, what's the biggest challenge for her, Sergeant, do you think?
Well, I think the biggest challenge for her will just be able to recognize if she's starting to go down that wrong path again, because there are so many temptations that she will be put in front of. It's going to be up to her and her family and her support group and hopefully her counselors or whatever she's doing to stay straight to make sure that she does, because the temptations, whether they're from old friends or just anything, are going to be very difficult for her, and it sounds like she's heading in the right direction, so I certainly wish her well, but that's going to be a big struggle, knowing that those contacts and that environment is readily available to her if she decides to go down that dark path again.
Adele, we do wish you well. Go ahead, General.
I'm really glad you chose a story where you have someone that's succeeding, that there's recovery, because so many of the stories are ending the other way, but people should see that there is hope. If we work at it, if we get help to people, there are people in recovery, many thousands of them, and we can do this. It can work, and we've always got to maintain that hope.
Good luck, Adele. Two final questions. We're almost out of time. As law enforcement professionals, are you concerned when states like Colorado, California, Washington, and Oregon, I hope I've got the states right, are beginning to legalize recreational marijuana? Just a quick response. General?
I am. And I don't want to overstate this. Marijuana is not killing people directly. And certainly, it's not everyone who starts using marijuana moves on to more dangerous drugs. But many, many of the people we find using more dangerous drugs did start with marijuana. It still does remain a gateway in that sense. And I'm concerned, too, that it does have hazards. It can be addictive, according to the Centers for Disease Control. It can be dangerous when you mix it with driving, when you mix it with other substances. And like with the heroin you buy on the street, you don't know what's in the marijuana you buy on the street either. So as we move toward that, I think sanctioning this as a society is a dangerous message to send to young people.
Your response, sir?
Oh, I would agree. Just simply and many people have heard this already, but the marijuana that's grown now is high-grade marijuana with a much higher THC level than in years past. Along with that comes other types of marijuana edibles, which are, small candies that people are using and those kind of things. So there is a correlation between the higher amounts of THC in marijuana and how people can become addicted to it and then move on to something else because their body becomes immune to that certain level that marijuana gets them to, so then they seek out that next level of drug that will get them to that high or a higher high than they got with marijuana.
Okay, we're down to our final minute, so final question. What's at stake in this debate in the next 3 or 4 years out? Sergeant, you want to go first?
You mean as far as the legalization?
No, in terms of what's at stake with our struggle to help those who are addicted and the increasing level, heroin, opiate,
sure,
fentanyl, carfentanil. What's at stake?
Well, I think at stake is just the quality of living for all the citizens of Wisconsin. And what's at stake is the fact that we need to address this and put all of our resources that we can toward getting people healthy again. And when I mean healthy, I mean not only physically but mentally. And like I said before, that also includes the addict, but the addict's parents or their friends and all that support network, because you look at the video we just saw with mom and dad and how they're struggling, and the brother, and I've been to a lot of different areas of that family level where I've talked with people, and it's a struggle, and we want to keep that family unity together. So I think a lot of that's at stake with making sure that they get all the help they need and we can move on.
General, you watched the overdose issue as a DA and now Attorney General. What's at stake looking out 3-4 years, sir?
This is the very health and safety of our state. And this is driving much more than just the challenges physically to the addicted person who's abusing these substances. They have to find a way to support their habit. This is driving increases in all kinds of crime. It's affecting the very fabric of our society. We have got to work to reduce this demand. We've got to work hard to prevent new people from coming into this danger.
Attorney General Brad Schimmel and Dane County Sergeant R.J. Lur-Quinn, thank you so much. There's no more important topic for this Newsmakers. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you.